The Dolo White Podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. Follow Cinema Anywhere Nashville on Instagram and book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience today. Hey, it's Dolo White, and this is the Dolo White Podcast. We are failing our young people and have been for a very long time. Our education system in America has been underfunded for way too long, and people will often scoff at the phrase defund the police, but nobody bats an eye at the fact that our education system has been defunded repeatedly throughout the years. Plain and simple, our school systems need more money, and this is a very important issue. My guest today is Christian Bugs, the chair for the Metro Nashville Public School System, and we had an incredible conversation. So sit back, relax, and get ready to get a little bit pissed off. Welcome to the Dolo White Podcast.
Polo Gini. Live.
Yeah. What's up?
This is not live. It's completely recorded.
Broadcasting from one of the top recording studios in all of Nashville, Tennessee.
Yeah, that's not true at all. I'm probably at home doing this.
He's been called one of the greatest thinkers of his time.
Literally no one has ever called me that. I do kind of agree with it, though.
A 2017 recipient of the Nobel Peace Prize.
That's just a flat out lie.
Talking politics, community, race, religion, entertainment, sports, and whatever the fuck else.
Yeah.
It's the Dolo White Podcast.
Episode 67 now of the Dolo White Podcast. My guest today, the chair of the MNVS School Board, Christian Bugs. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for being here.
No, thank you so much for the opportunity to share.
Okay, I feel like Nashville, when it comes to education, we have a lot of similar problems, probably of blue cities in red states. And we're kind of going through some things right now. And that's why I wanted to have you on, because I see it on the news and then, you know, I have a kid and I don't have time to read about it and I fall asleep. And I wanted to know what's going on. I hear a lot about charter schools. I hear a lot about voucher programs and things of that nature. And I wanted to get an expert on to do this. So
no, I appreciate, and you know, I have a toddler also. And so it's important for me to not only kind of replay it in my own mind, why do I go so hard? But it's also good for me to share with like-minded colleagues and peers, and then even sometimes people who might not agree with me, but have never seen the data. So
right.
I appreciate this more than you know.
What exactly is the governor? We'll just say Tennessee to start off. But I know this is going on in other states too, but let's hear, since we're here, what exactly are they trying to do?
That's a great broad question. Let me level set first. Okay?
Sure, yes.
So MNPS sits in Nashville. Nashville is one of the big four. That's four of the largest counties in Tennessee. You have Memphis, Nashville, Chattanooga, and Knoxville. There are 95 counties in Tennessee, but the four of us bring in something like 70% of the revenue.
Wow.
Because we have so many big corporations, organizations, and we just have so many people. It's very dense. But, you know, if you're in Nashville, you also know that that Broadway area, even though we're a tourist city, whatever happens on Broadway, whatever happens at those honky-tonks, all the money that's brought in, that doesn't necessarily benefit the everyday Nashvillian. That mm-hmm. benefits Tennesseans because we end up having to pay the state so much of that, and we also go to pay the Music City Center. So I say all that to say, it feels like we're always paying for something. We're always getting taxes raised. Money just comes from our paychecks and goes right back out the door, off into government, but then we don't see the benefits. And that's especially true in education because of the way the state legislature, the governor, other state-level entities kind of view Nashville and the way we bring in money. So with all that said, we end up spending $12,000 per child. Again, that's $12,000 per child. You know, we have 83,000 students. We have 11,000 employees through which we serve them. We have 169 schools. But if you look at area private schools, and I often use that as a comparison just for context to help people understand what it takes to educate a child. If you look at area private schools, they're spending between $25,000 and $35,000 a year.
Mm-hmm.
Now, true, they may only be charging $21,000, but then they have the capacity to fundraise for their 1,000 students, 2,000 students, as opposed to our almost 100,000 students. Again, all that was to level set. When you look at the little bit of money that we get, then you see a governor, you see a state legislature that's not exactly friendly to the diversity that we see, the urban districts that we see across Tennessee, including Nashville. You see that they're trying to often siphon money away from us. They would like to think that they're not hurting our students. They would like to think that, well, we just need to shift dollars to these poorer, more rural counties, that it's going to really help them, when the collective argument by school boards across the state is that we just need more of an investment in education period.
Right.
So no matter the city, no matter the district, no matter blue or red, we all, I don't care that we have 169 schools and Maury County may only have 12. We both need more money. I don't care that Shelby County serves over 100,000 students and Johnson City may serve less than, you know, 10,000. We both need more money. But we can't seem to get that through the heads of non-educators or people who don't have their kids in public schools.
And I don't, what I don't understand about that, and I've brought this up a lot, especially on this podcast, is that one of, if not the biggest deterrents from somebody committing a quote unquote crime later on in life is education. So the better a child is educated, the less likely they are to commit a crime later on in life. You would think that all of this, we need to stop crime, we need to stop crime stuff, would start with funding schools and bringing up mm-hmm. education, especially in poor school districts. But that's not at all what happens.
What I think I've realized is that it's so hard to draw a line between one or even two or three decisions to what happens to a child 10 or 20 years from now. Mm-hmm. So it's hard to see what legislation right now, how that impacts a child next year, how it impacts them, you know, how it impacts an 8-year-old when he turns 18 or 28 or 38, when he starts having children himself. And so I think that's how you don't end up having the kinds of conversations around education that you should, because I can't say, well, these five things that happened to this baby that were out of his and his parents' control impacted him negatively 20 years later. No one would agree with me on that. They would say, well, it was his poor choices and his family's poor right. choices, and it was the neighborhood he lived in. Well, if we had and that's the other side about education. Education does not start in a school building. You know, as a parent, yeah. what you expose your child to outside of class, outside of school, is what they end up becoming. Like, I give this example a lot. I have a physics degree. I worked at NASA. I also attended MLK. Martin Luther King Academic Magnet Junior High School for the Health Sciences and Engineering was the number one school in Tennessee at the time. It was a STEM school. We really heavily focused on physics and biology. But I don't have a physics degree because of that school. It was a great school. But I have a physics degree because of the engineering department at Tennessee State University. They had summer programming that they started when I was in the third grade. So in the third grade, I was going up to TSU's campus. I was being taught by engineering students who were going on to work for Boeing and NASA and other organizations. And they are the ones that fed me and fed this passion to me and kind of exposed me to more. And so when we think about resourcing students, we've got to stop just thinking about schools. Yes, we need to resource schools more, but we also just have to resource communities in a way that say, hey, parents, I know you want what's best for your child. Let me help you find that thing. Let me help connect you to people, resources, advocacy that will help you to understand what that good thing is. Because you know what it's like to have a toddler and not know, well, when am I supposed to teach them colors? And,
yeah.
Well, when is she supposed to learn her name? And when should they know their left from their right? And do we need to be teaching them how to read at 2 years old? Or should we allow them to play and they learn how to read it in the first grade? You know, and so imagine if we had a world that resourced parents in a way that they could resource their children.
I agree with that. I also say, to add on to it, I think another level of that is some kids, a lot of kids, don't have a good family life to go back to. And so wouldn't you want the time that they spend at school to be as positive of an environment as possible? So when you say funding, what do schools need? I know teachers need way more money. And I for the life of me, I don't understand why teachers don't get paid, you know, the higher echelon of government employees. But sure. We know that teaching in order to encourage other people to become teachers, we need to raise that pay. Right.
Certainly.
And probably less students in less more classes, more teachers, less students in each class would probably be something.
Just decrease the student to teacher ratio. For
yes.
Sure.
So what does funding look like? What needs to be funded?
Ooh,
let's
child,
start.
Where do I start? Okay. So, you know, we could talk about pay for sure, because when we talk about pay, we also are talking about professional development and investment in teachers, mm-hmm. making sure that, you know, what we call paraprofessionals or teacher's aides, that when they want to transition to be the what we call the teacher of record or be the classroom teacher, that they are helped to go back to school and get bachelor's and master's degrees and that they can run a classroom themselves. We could also talk about how we should better pay bus drivers
yes.
and support staff in a way that says, hey, this is the first and last person my baby sees every day. They should be taught better. They should be supported better. They should have a higher living wage or higher quality of life. But even if you ignore the adults in this situation, my son goes to what was once considered the poorest school in Nashville, Jones, in 37208. It's nothing for me to walk into Jones and drop him off and see students walking up in sweats. Only because, I mean, that's what their parents had that was clean. So when you look at my son's school, you're looking at paying for uniforms. You're looking at feeding them breakfast, lunch, and then my baby gets a snack every day. They send home food boxes every day. Our food pantry is open 24/7, you know, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even on holidays, because we want to make sure that babies and their families have food to eat so that that's one less thing that child and that family have to worry about. You can't teach a sick child. You can't teach a hungry child, right? But then when we start talking about the actual curriculum during the school day, we have to think about purchasing books. It costs about $14 million to put a book in every child's hand. And we can say, hey, we're shifting to technology, so we should only be worrying about whatever streaming online. But every package, every single package that comes from a curriculum provider has a technology portion, and it has a printed version, because we know some students like me, I need to see it. I need to hold it for myself, even if I have to print it myself. So $14 million every single year just to keep books in their hands. We need to be able to update our facilities. I mean, imagine a pandemic happening and our HVAC systems haven't been updated in literally a century, or at least 50 or 60 years. We need to be able to update buildings. We have 169 that our students are in, or I'm sorry, 159 that our students are in that some have not been updated in 30 or 40 years. We need maintenance on buses. I keep going back to professional development, because it's not just about academic professional development for teachers, but it's also about that social emotional development, making sure that not only teachers' mental health is supported, but that whatever support staff or volunteers we have come in, that they are taught how to best maximize their time with children. I mean, we could talk forever about what it costs to educate a child, but think about what it takes to just raise a child and then maximize that maybe double or quadruple that, because you're putting them in a classroom with other students who have different needs themselves.
And speaking of curriculum, Tennessee's been in the news lately because I guess, and as a white person, other white people don't want kids to know what our ancestors did. Is that the reason? It's the only thing I can think of. Like, why not teach this accurately over time? And Tennessee is like, no, I'm not going to do that.
There's so much I could say about this. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of this is just talking points that come from kind of party lines. And even if you ignore the two-party system, it's talking points that have been generational. If you've ever heard of the Southern Strategy, back in the Lyndon Nixon days, when they started shifting from talking about race as it related to policy to class. Now, the everyday person understood that, well, race and class are often joined at the hip. You know, that if I've not been offered any kind of resourcing, if I haven't been offered opportunity, then I likely will not be able to advance the way that my similar peer has that looks differently than I do, right?
Right.
Again, we could talk about that for forever. Critical race theory has been the talking point.
Yes.
It's been the thing that everyone hangs their hat on, these Moms for Liberty or other organizations that are looking to fight back against the teaching of factual history, but they can't ever define what critical race theory is. It's not something that we teach 6-year-olds or even 16-year-olds. It's something that's taught to adults who are in law school.
It's like a graduate program,
it
right?
It is. Yes. It's for law school students to connect race disparities to policy, to the laws that they'll be, you know, that they'll be learning, that they'll be fighting for and against as lawyers. But it's been fascinating for me because when I think, better yet, I have another good example for you. I often think about Bill Cosby versus Heathcliff Huxtable, right? I can love the Cosby Show. I can love what Heathcliff Huxtable stood for, but I can also be disgusted by what Bill Cosby was alleged to have done, right?
Right.
But that forces me to think critically. It forces me to see what I considered a hero and see him as human. It forces me to think about how I view myself, how I view even sexuality or drug usage. It morphs into so many different conversations about so many different things, right? That's what we want our students struggling with. I want you to look at an icon like George Washington and realize that he worked hard. He was a war hero. He was strategic, but he also raped and pillaged and knocked the teeth out of slaves and put them in his own mouth, right?
Right.
But that would force them to think critically beyond even their race, but it just forces them to think critically about who we consider heroes and why. But for whatever reason, the privileged in our community have never had to struggle with that. And so that's where I've landed, that if you've never had to struggle with it, you don't understand why you should. If you've never had to question yourself or your identity or someone that you loved, why would you want to start now? And then why would you want your child doing that now? Because let me tell you, this next generation of babies, they are going to be the ones that save us because they give no ifs, okay? They share information quickly and readily with technology, and they're pushing back against us. They're asking questions.
Yeah.
They're forming their own opinions. And I... even with my own son, it's hard sometimes to hear him tell me that he does not like something that I think he should like. But heaven forbid I allow him to be a person.
Yes,
on his own.
Right. That was, I'm not going to lie, I've watched a lot and read a lot about critical race theory in the argument. That was the best example and answer I've ever heard delivered.
I mean,
I got chills when you said that because it was just such a masterful answer that I feel like everybody can relate to. And that brings us kind of back to the state of Tennessee. Now, I know when Trump was president, there was the big voucher program thing. And I, what exactly do you, you're not clear still?
No, so I do know, unfortunately.
Okay.
What's really unfortunate is that, okay, charter schools, as they stand right now in Tennessee.
Let's start. Hold on. What is exactly a charter school? Because I'm going to be honest with you.
Sure.
I'm not 100% clear myself. Because when I was a kid, we had public schools and we had private schools.
Yes.
And that was it. And then along the line, before I had a kid, charter schools came along and they seem to be it. So what exactly is a charter school?
And so I'll give you this context first. I actually started my career when I left NASA, decided that I was going to throw my physics degree away and become a bartender because I wanted to be a teacher. I started at a charter school. The first charter school in Nashville. And again, didn't know what it was, didn't know what it meant, but it was led by a black nun. It seemed like it had such a great, or at least a great mission. The mission was there. The vision just had not been fully fleshed out. And so I came to learn that charter schools have a little bit more autonomy when it comes to state regulations, when it comes to laws that they have to follow. They can have teachers in the classroom that may not have their full certification yet, but are working toward it. It, in theory, is a great idea. It's like, okay, if East Nashville has an issue with literacy. A charter school can start there and they can focus on how to raise literacy scores. Then once they've mastered that in East Nashville, they spread that around and they share what they did. They shared how they increased parent engagement. And then they move on to tackle maybe numeracy, or maybe they go to North Nashville to tackle literacy. That was what charter schools were intended to do. They were supposed to be a pocket of innovation, you know, have kind of looser laws and looser regulations, have a little bit more wiggle room to try things out. And then they share what they've learned. It's kind of morphed in a lot of ways, but it depends on the school that you're looking at. Really, all charter schools are different in the same way that every public school is, or every traditional public school is different, right? But many of our charter schools in Nashville, unfortunately, are they're looking to just expand. So instead of really sharing and collaborating with schools around them, it's become a lot more competitive, right? And so that's really what charter schools are. And
I take it there's money involved somewhere. Somebody's getting otherwise.
Well, I will say that, so the charter schools in Nashville right now are not for profit. So there should not be anyone that's necessarily benefiting from them. But I will admit, you know, especially before we got this large investment from the mayor last year, teachers, administrators were often getting paid a whole lot more than our traditional public schools because, again, we have 159 schools. If you take out our charters, we have 130 traditional public schools that we had to spread our money around, right? Mm. And we had to have centralized busing. We had to have centralized ELL service, or, you know, New American Services. You know, we had to centralize that to pay to support all of our schools. Well, with a charter school, if it's a lot smaller, if you only have one or only two or three buildings, it's just a whole lot easier to kind of fundraise and fund those schools.
Right.
And then the other side of this is that because of our charter, if you don't have a PTO, you cannot accept direct donations, but a charter school can. So my son's school cannot necessarily accept direct donations. They can accept stuff. They just can't accept money. So that's another kind of difference that we have. But the way the voucher programs are coming in, that is where the for-profit comes in.
Okay.
So let's say that you, Dola White, you're like, you know what? I got like $1 million. I'm going to see if I can make $2 million. There's a lot of money coming through.
You are really overestimating my net worth right now. But
I'm speaking it over you. That's what I'm doing.
There you go. Speaking to existence.
And look, I've seen your baby on Instagram. She's going to be a star.
Yeah.
So $1 million coming your way. But let's say you have $1 million and you see this as an investment opportunity because people see the ESSER dollars that came from the federal government during the pandemic. And heaven forbid all that go to our babies directly. People are seeing that as a way to increase vendor services, to develop bus drivers, recruitment. I mean, just different ways to tap into that money. And unfortunately, vouchers are another way to do that. So let's say that I would never do this, but let's say that I wanted to open a private school, but I don't really have the money to make it a private school. I'm going to say that I'm going to use the voucher program. I'm going to take the $12,000 that you would have given to a Montessori school. I'm going to take that, and instead I'm going to get $7,000 to educate your child. Now, if your child has any kind of exceptional need, if they need a speech pathologist, if they are a new American and need language services, if they have any kind of behavioral supports that they need, if they need a nurse to administer shots for them, anything, I don't give you that. I'm either not going to accept your child, or I'm going to accept them and not meet their needs in that way. But I'm going to still get that money. And then once I've taken your money, your child cannot go back to that public school because their allotment of dollars has already been spent. It's a sham. Vouchers are a sham. But what's most unfortunately, I think, about it is that vouchers are conflating themselves with charter schools. Charter schools are saying, hey, we are not for profit. We are not for privatization. We do, you know, we think that all of our funding should go directly to the students, but vouchers are trying to kind of latch themselves on. And to be frank, you know, this one party that's pushing the voucher system is doing the same thing. They're saying, well, yeah, it's all the same. We're all trying to look at reform efforts and we just want what's best for our kids. But interestingly enough, none of these people are sending their kids to charter schools, to traditional public schools, or to these privatized voucher schools, because an MBA, an Innsworth, a USN, they've already said, hey, we don't want to compete with you all. Like, we support the MPS, so we're not going to take these dollars. So who do you think is going to take them? These mom and pop, quote unquote, Christian or evangelical schools that just pop up out of nowhere.
Wow.
And then there will be no one to regulate them. There's no one to watch their test scores. There's no one to go in and see what services they're providing. There's literally no one to go in and see if they're locking students in closets or not. So and I'm not making that up. That is something that we've seen happen in a different state.
Wow. And are we in Tennessee, are we further along with the voucher program than any other state, or?
It's kind of hard to gauge because it depends on who you talk to. There are some people that think that voucher programs will eventually come to pass because there's been such a push behind them. And then there are others that think, well, no, that'll never happen down here. We're smart enough. We're going to watch that. We are in the Bible Belt, baby. I'm fearful of it. I am, because it could siphon off so much money. And before we know it, it's grown so much that we can't scale it back. And so your baby, my baby, his babies, whoever has children in public schools will be done harm, because literally thousands of dollars will be taken out of their school system every day.
I have nothing to back up what I'm about to say. I'm just going to take a guess that black and brown kids are going to be affected the most by this.
Oh, you got it. All right. And what's frustrating to that point, or to that theme, is that I hate when non-allies try to suggest that they are equity warriors, right? Mm-hmm. When they try to say, well, oh, we're doing this for the black and the brown and the indigent and the poor and the differently abled. No, you're not, because you're making this easier for students or for families who are maybe in the middle of the road, who say, I really want to put my kid in private school, but I'm about $7,000 short. You're making it easier for them to pull $7,000 out and go to a private school that they might that might actually be an okay fit for them, but it's doing harm to students like, you know, the poor child who doesn't have a family that has the capacity to be actively involved, engaged. And so they think this private school is going to be great for them. It's a little black boy that just needs some help. And now he goes to this school, can't transfer out, but he's being done harm. He likely is there with people who don't look like him. He's literally being locked in closets. So yes, it is going to exacerbate the harm that we already see in our communities for black and brown and differently abled students.
Wow. Okay, let's do this.
I threw a lot at you.
Yeah, you did. I'm like taking it all in. Let's do this. Let's say you're the governor of Tennessee. See, now I'm speaking things into existence.
I rebuke.
Because I mean, in the 20 minutes we spent together, I would for sure vote for you, literally right now. How do you make education in the state better?
I'm going to beat this dead horse for the next 2 years until I'm no longer a school board member. We have got to make educating children a priority.
Yes.
I would love to live in a state that actually proves it cares about kids by investing in them. I would love to see that. We make investments in just the wrong things. And so the governor, the mayor, these are all CEO positions. It is their job to look at a budget, to align resources, and then to appoint people who have a level of expertise in different departments. I would start with that budget, and that if we're only spending 30% of our budget on education, if that much, and by education, I mean they're saying that anything they do that supports kids is education, I would raise that to at least 50%. You know, your household budget is your moral document. It says what you deem important. If you deem shoes important, you might only eat peanut butter and jelly sandwiches, and that works for you, right? But when you're managing a state with a million children, you've got to be more mindful about how they're going to be supported and impacted for the rest of their lives. So I would start with the budget, you know, just allocating more funding. I would also look at partnering with area universities. How many universities and colleges do we have across the state of Tennessee where we could really incentivize the teaching field? You know, the way that we've talked about the profession has been so inappropriate in the last decade that we are running people away from the field. So I would partner to incentivize students who wanted to maybe become mathematicians or physicists or doctors or lawyers or underwater basket weavers, for all I care. You know, we need artists. You know, take anyone from any profession that would not mind getting a certification and having them train in a classroom. Because not only does that make them makes some people want to shift to become classroom teachers, but it also helps to humanize students, even if you're not going to be in the profession much longer. It helps you to remember that these are babies. These are children. Now I've been taught how to view them. So when I see the mom that's out struggling with a two-year-old, I'm not gawking at her or laughing at her. I am seeing that she is educating a little human, right?
Right.
And that changes the way that we view people, certainly the way that we view children for the rest of our lives. And so the budget, incentivizing and working with area universities. I would also look at the different organizations and companies that are coming into Tennessee and understand how are they planning to partner with us around public education or just supports for children in general. If you have an Amazon and AllianceBernstein, I don't mean to pick on them, and Oracle, then it might be helpful for them to have a percentage of their programming that goes towards pre-K development, or that at the very least offers it, that they have to partner with area public schools so that they offer pre-K or daycare to those teachers. I mean, just any way to get teachers into the classroom, free up time for parents to maybe have parent advocacy training, because there's nothing like leaving from a hospital, being given a newborn and said, all right, good luck, keep them alive. Imagine if we had some type of free parenting class, for lack of a better phrase, where you just are made to feel comfortable. Just you're given resources readily. You are not made to feel like you're a bad parent. You are supported in your decisions. You don't feel like you have to go out and figure out what's going to be the best school for my child, because there is some way that the information is coming to you consistently, right? And so there's so much I could say if I was governor, but yeah, budget, supports for universities and the profession, and then kind of encouraging or supporting companies that come to Tennessee. Instead of incentivizing them to be here and bring outsiders into the state, incentivizing them to work with our public schools.
My last question for you, I'll let you out of here.
I'm sorry, I just talked and talked.
Now you're amazing. Like, you are amazing.
Thank you.
I'm gonna love editing this. I'm gonna like edit what I said and and that's it. I know, like, I want to say it's Netherlands. Maybe it's not the Netherlands. It's somewhere in that European area of the Netherlands, one of those countries over there. I know they have one of the best education systems in the world.
Yes.
We're America. We always beat our chest and we're America and we're the best and everything.
We're America.
Why do we suck so bad at education? And why don't we make this investment? We're the richest company in the history of the world, yet we're letting education just get worse and worse and worse and worse and worse and watching it fall through the cracks, lighting it in flames and just watching it burn. And the few people seem to really care.
There are a lot of different ways I could respond. I would first say we're also one of the most, if the not diverse nations in the world, right? And we have a history of just anti-blackness, anti-diversity, anti-immigrant, even though we're a nation of immigrants, right? And so I think what it really boils down to is we've got to change the hearts and minds of people. Because as long as people want what's better for themselves, I want what's best for my child, but I would never want what's best for my child if it's to the detriment of other children.
Yeah.
But not all of us understand that, and not all of us see our decisions in that way. And so what often happens is that we're fighting for more for us when we could be fighting for more for us,
yes.
You know? And so I think that's what it really boils down to me, because I can't see anything else. I mean, yeah, a portion of this is just greed, that if students can't advocate for themselves, and especially when it comes to your elected officials, students can't, you know, babies can't vote. They can't advocate for themselves. People who don't have the capacity, that are disenfranchised in a number of ways, tend to not advocate for themselves at high levels. And so all you have is that top 1% or 10% that only sees what's in their tunnel vision. They only see their privilege and they can't see beyond it. So until we can kind of not just tell, but show people how their decisions are impacting others, we'll always be worse in education. We'll always have low literacy rates. We'll always remain anti-diversity, anti-black, anti-woman. You know, we'll never want each other to succeed if we see someone else's success as doing harm to our own.
You've been spitting bars this entire, it's like almost 30 minutes now. Yeah, you're killing. Is there anything, did I miss anything? Is there any messages you need to get out? Anything?
You know what? I do, just real quick. I would urge anyone out there to just get involved, figure out what's happening and see where you can insert yourself. So there are three websites I always suggest. capital.tn.gov. That's where you can view everything that the Tennessee legislature does. They meet between January and roughly May, and that's when they are making laws. Go up to the Capitol, look at the agendas, understand what kind of bills are coming down the pike, and understand how you can better advocate. So that's again, capital.tn.gov. at the local level or the city level, I would say go to Nashville.gov. Understand when the council meets. Advocate to the council. If there's something that you think they could or should be doing better, if you want to partner with them around how they advocate to the legislature, because please know that the state supersedes everything. If the council decides something and the state says no, then what the state says trumps it. No pun intended. But reach out to the council at Nashville.gov. And then lastly, MNPS.org. If you go to MNPS.org, that's Metro Nashville Public Schools, we have a number of resources, or at the very least, we have school board members who can connect you to resources. We don't have all the answers, but we have a number of partnerships around the city, and those partners are ready and willing to support you, like the Public Education Foundation, United Way, Alignment Nashville, the Public Library, book 'em. There are so many organizations that we can connect you to, and we would love to.
Christian Bugs, you're... Bars, I told you the whole time. Thank you for doing this. I don't know that you'll ever, I don't know what your plans are for the future, but whatever, if you run for anything, you've got yourself at least one vote here.
Hey,
so there you go. Yeah, I would love for you to continue leading, continue down a path of leadership, because I think you're built for it.
I appreciate that.
Thank you for doing this.
And thank you for having me.
Of course. This episode of the podcast is brought to you by Cinema Anywhere Nashville. You can book your indoor or outdoor cinema experience right now, starting at only $350. Cinema Anywhere Nashville provides your choice of a 16, 24, 36, or even 100-foot screen, plus projector setup and sound system. This is a super dope service that wouldn't just be great for corporate and work events, but also birthday and holiday parties, or if you want to have a romantic evening with your significant other, Cinema Anywhere Nashville is perfect for all of those things. They have the right experience for you. Follow them on Instagram right now at Cinema Anywhere Nashville and book your cinema experience today. Want to say thank you once again to my guest, Christian Bugs. She was amazing today. Make sure you follow her on the gram at _MissBugs. Follow me as well at DoleWhite101, DoleWhite101. And whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, please subscribe to it. And make sure you get notifications and all that set up. That way you know when there are new episodes. Speaking of new episodes, brand new episode drops first thing Wednesday morning. My guest next week will be Raynar Moody at 24/7 Hunt. Yes, my vegetarian ass is having a hunting episode next week. So make sure you tap into that. Super interesting conversation I'll be having with my guy, Raynar Moody. And also, if you feel like if it's in your heart to leave me a good review or rate this 5 stars, depending on what platform you're listening on, go ahead and do that. I definitely appreciate it. But that's it. That's my time. I'm out. Till next week.